I'm Jeff Fry, a retired IBM fellow and past CTO of IBM's mainframe platform. And as I've said before in these calls, very much a mainframe enthusiast. Today, I'm very pleased to host the I Am a Mainframer conversation series and a conversation with my friend Neil Ferguson with Sine Nomine. This conversation is sponsored by the Open Mainframe Project. And as a Linux Foundation collaborative project, the Open Mainframe Project is intended to help create a mainframe-focused open source community. It's also intended to serve as a focal point for development and use of enterprise Linux in a mainframe computing environment. The goal of the project is to excite the Linux community around the use of the mainframe and to foster collaboration across the mainframe community to develop and exploit shared Linux tool sets, resources, and services in a mainframe environment. In addition, the project seeks to involve the participation of academic institutions to help in assisting educational programs aimed at developing mainframe Linux engineers and developers of tomorrow. So Neil, welcome. It's a real pleasure to talk with you today. We usually have our discussions on Facebook, but it's a pleasure to actually hear your voice.
Yes, thanks, Jeff. It's been a while since I've actually seen you in the flesh as well, so it's nice to put a voice to the text.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Some apologies up front for anybody dealing with an Australian accent. I hope this call is subtitled.
Yeah, it's charming. Let me get started here by asking you, Neil, to tell us a little bit about you and your team at Sine Nomine.
For as myself, I've been involved with the mainframe since, 1981 officially, but actually I found some textbooks on teaching yourself IBM Assembler back in when I was in grade 10. So I suppose I can go back to 1978, but officially 1981 with VM, VSE, and worked in Australia until I moved to the US in 99, where I started doing a lot more Linux work. We had actually been doing a public port of Linux there. So I worked with Sterling Software, and then I worked with Software AG before starting with Sine Nomine, where I've been devoted to doing mainframe, Linux, and the like. The SNA team is a relatively small little consultancy company. We deal with all sorts of things like OpenAFS, which is one of our main open source projects. We have a number of customers running that in production. We do enterprise system, enterprise command center design and installation from everywhere from designing the building to putting in seats to hooking up OS 390, ZOS, and all sorts of bids and bods to get things working in an enterprise control center. And then finally, in my particular area, it's devoted to mainframe, ZVM, bit of VSE, bit of ZOS, lots of Linux, and lots of open source work with our distribution, our version of CentOS, which we call Clefos for branding reasons, but we have a full CentOS distribution available for people. We do a Mono, which is .NET under Linux, which allows you to run a whole lot of Microsoft-type applications. And just recently, we've got into the Docker and OpenShift space, which has been very exciting, and I see a lot of potential in the mainframe for those technologies.
Yeah, that's very cool. I know that, you know, from our history together, Sine Nomine has been literally at the forefront of pushing some of the boundaries and expanding the role and exploring the role of the mainframe for quite some time, especially right in the area of Linux and historically with virtualization. It's really great to see this continue with some of the new technologies. I always say that, you know, the mainframe, even though it has its architectural roots, you know, back, you know, in 1964, it's an extremely modern platform, and it's continually being infused with, you know, the most current and modern and advanced technologies, not only from a hardware standpoint, but now especially with Linux, which is not new on the mainframe, with all of this advanced and current and open software.
That's for sure. I mean, you know, people say that, look, you have 1960s technology, but it's testament to its designers that it has been allowed to evolve where it's you know, extraordinary in its breadth and depth and function, the uptime, the security, all those goodnesses that you need in an enterprise, the mainframe has and continues to grow. It's certainly not the stagnant platform that the media, popular media, teams to imply. And it's been very exciting to demonstrate that by particularly getting things like Linux up and running and getting all the great software packages that comes with the Linux, and now with Docker containers, seeing what Donna did with that demonstration of hooking all this stuff together and having it all run in a mainframe and being able to swap over all the resiliency, everything that a modern organization needs, the mainframe has and continues to be ahead of the curve, frankly.
I share that view with you, and I think more and more people over time are seeing it that way, especially when there's an ever increasing need for what we kind of in somewhat of a cliche way talk about enterprise qualities of service in terms of availability and data integrity and security, especially in the area of security. So we'll talk a little bit about more of that in just a moment. But let me ask you, what are some of the recent projects you've been working on, and what's exciting for you?
What's been exciting recently has been, in fact, Docker and OpenShift. I've recently written a white paper, which is available if you look at any of our lists there, which describes how you can get the Docker environment, build containers, and then use OpenShift to manage the life cycle of these guys and hook them all together and do all those wonderful things that container technologies have been promising and now are delivering. So over the last 18 months, I think we've put out about 50-odd containers that you can run immediately on Linux on Z. Doesn't matter what distribution you're running. That's the other beauty of Docker. As long as the kernel has the right syscall support, then you can run these containers, whether you're running Ubuntu, SUSE, or Red Hat. You can run these containers that will give you MariaDB, will give you Nginx, et cetera, straight out of the bag, and you can start being productive without having to go through the procurement, rollout of a new Linux virtual machine, et cetera. The containers just make that rolling out process that much easier. And then you couple up with OpenShift, and that's been an interesting exercise in getting that built on Z. Interesting from the fact that it required about 3 lines of addition just to recognize the platform, and everything else just works because it is just Linux. Yeah. And using OpenShift to then hook these containers together, having them operate, bring them down, have them automatically recover, have the persistent storage allocated how you want. It's been a lot of fun with this technology, and I think it's got a quite a bright future.
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad you mentioned, I think people still have not an appreciation or an awareness of the capabilities of the mainframe in the Linux space. I still get reactions from people that, they perceive it to be different in some way, or perceive it to be, it must have proprietary extensions, or it's not exactly the same. And, we've always talked about, the Linux distributions themselves being, as common as any Linux distribution on any platform. I mean, there's a certain amount of platform binding in any of these platforms, including Intel.
But
I'm glad you mentioned the fact that, these open source pieces of software, in so many cases, we've had so many testimonials that you just drop these things on and they work. And not only do they work, they scale better, they perform better, they're more reliable. We'll talk about this a little bit in a minute too, but that is not well understood. Uh, and And somehow we've got to do a better job, and hopefully these kinds of calls will help with that, but to spread the word on the value here.
Yeah, it's a lot of people still under the impression of the mainframe being the 3270, which I love, by the way, but as a user interface for the newbie or those who are used to webs and things like that, can be a little intimidating. And similarly, they expect, oh, if I'm running Linux, then what JCL do I need to run? And
Right.
As much as a fan of JCL as I was back in the 80s, I'm certainly glad I don't have to deal with it anymore in the Linux world that I'm doing operating in at the moment.
Yeah. You know, I know, and you're far more an expert in that some of that than I am. But you know, my observation has always been that, you know, every platform has a form of that, right? And every platform has, you know, its particular bent on, you know, command language and et cetera. So, you know, even in some of those conversations, I think the mainframe gets a bad rap for some of that. But
well, even in the open systems world, the Unix and Linux world, if you're a devotee of the corn shell, then you disparage those who use Bash or C shell, and vice versa. That's it's the same old religious arguments that you've been involved in, even in the days of MVS versus VM and that type of stuff. So yeah, that's cultural.
Yeah, I you know, just to take a little bit of a tangent here on the discussion we're having on portability, right, and openness. The other place that this kind of shows up is when people talk about the need for skills or specific skills for the mainframe. And, you know, I think even IBM over time has shifted its view on what it means by, you know, mainframe education. And, you know, IBM has these programs and university programs, et cetera, and Master the Mainframe contest, et cetera. And I think it used to be that the view was, you know, that there was something very specific about the mainframe, and maybe this was because it was dominated by a ZOS environment, where, you know, we had to introduce or teach skills that were very specific to use of the mainframe. And, you know, I think that's changing now to be more of a focus on an education on systems that are enterprise class, right? How to do, how to make sure that you have data integrity, how you make sure you have absolutely rock solid disaster recovery, et cetera. Because, you know, the idiosyncratic nature of the mainframe in a Linux environment has gone away. It's just Linux.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's for sure. Yeah, you're right. It's going away from teaching how people to navigate an ISPF session to those, you know, business related functions, as you said, the DRs, the, you know, uptimes and that type of stuff that are the important things now.
Yeah. So what has been your involvement with the Open Mainframe Project?
We joined, entered our second year of membership to the Open Mainframe Project. I'm part of the technical steering committee, but we're still in our younger days, so we're only just really getting into the meat of getting projects and stuff going. And one of the things I'm involved in at the moment is the cloud area with a few others talking about provisioning and all that type of stuff. So some real meat starting to happen there. So my involvement tends to be, you know, seeing what's of interest, what projects are out there. For example, early last year, we did the IBM release, the Anomaly Detection Engine, which allows you to teach your system about what to expect in log files. And it will suck in a whole lot of log files, see what it then determines as normal. And then you can run exception reports as new stuff comes in, say, look, something's weird happening here. Here's an anomaly. Well, that was released to the Open Mainframe project, and I added MariaDB support for it there. And so it's that type of involvement from the, is there a software package that may prove useful to the community, to the bigger tasks of, you know, how do we work in this open, in this cloud environment to provision just as easily as everybody else does.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm you know, I had forgotten about the anomaly detection contribution when IBM, when we, I say we, given my past in, involvement in IBM, I remember when we made the proposed contribution of the anomaly detection stuff to the open community. And it was very interesting having those conversations about, because, you know, what was great about it is we did, you know, various meetups, et cetera, in the community, and it fostered a discussion on reliability and the availability needs, and, you know, the ability to kind of introduce analytics in a way, right, that was of some real value to businesses. So I'm really glad to see that has been as successful as it has been, and I'm really happy to hear that you've been extending that, right, for MariaDB in particular.
Yeah, and similarly, we built some early blockchain containers that so far, since they've been published early last year, have been downloaded and used 1,000 times. So it was a good indication of the interest in blockchain. I've recently built the latest fabric containers that were made available earlier this year. And that's been an interesting sidelight there as well. I haven't gotten into the blockchain as much as I have into OpenShift, but it's certainly a great technology, particularly for the Z. And just have, you know, when you've got these crypto cards on board and all the goodness that goes around how secure they are, it's a very promising technology.
Yeah, that's cool. And I know you mentioned Donna Dillenberger before. I know she's been pretty instrumental in this for Z Systems as well. Let me just ask you, given, you know, your work in this area, and maybe it's, as you said, maybe it's not as maybe you haven't spent as much time on blockchain as some of the others, but what do you think is blockchain to the point where it really is accepted and will be adopted in a really first class way for enterprises that, you know, need that kind of distributed ledger and that kind of a transaction. You know, at first, I think some people in the mainframe space were worried that either it wasn't ready for prime time, or people had misinterpreted the use of blockchain to replace, you know, the good tried and true two-phase committed, you know, hard and reliable transaction systems that Z is so well known for.
Yeah, I think it's one of those technologies that it's in a super state of existence at the moment. There's a lot of unknowns. Those who have pioneered it and are progressing with it and doing real things, like I think the noted case study is the people who track diamond shipments, etc. They understand it. A lot of other people think, well, it's blockchain, a product, and I just installed it. Not realizing that it's more than that. It's a application development environment where you specifically tailor applications based on the technology. And then the others, as you said, those who are coming from a straight transaction background, where a front end to one thing, which is entirely secure, and if I need to talk to anything else, we have other methods of doing it, to this really distributed method of cooperation and commerce. And I think it's a technology past the hype stage, but on the precipice of either falling into the, let's get right into it, to the, I'm not really sure about it. I think what needs to come out of leadership, like from the Open Mainframe Project and the vendors like IBM, are more case studies and demonstrations and that type of thing, so that people can get a proper feel for it, rather than say, blockchain, distributed ledger. Well, yeah. What does that really mean?
Yeah. before we leave this topic, I'm conscious of the time here, but I love having these discussions with you, Neil. Let me ask you about your perspective on cloud, and because I have, this is one where I have kind of a particular bone to pick about how people misinterpret the essence or the value of cloud computing, and by that I mean a service-oriented way of delivering IT with Z, which I always considered to be a platform that had such strengths and such capabilities that were very well aligned with the notion of a service utility or a service-based way, more of a service-based way of developing and delivering IT. But the prominent, again, attitude on cloud is, number one, that enterprises have to move all their workload off-premise somewhere and onto, grid-like Intel structures. Give me your perspective on cloud and its value on Z and how we can do better here.
I think one of the driving forces for cloud is CapEx versus OpEx. People like seeing large capital items disappear off their ledger and replaced by just purely operational expenditures. And I need to fire up another several images. Well, that comes out of my operational budget and type of things like that. And to the bean counters, that's really appealing. And so I think one of the things Z suffers from is they overlook the price of transactions on Z versus non-Z platforms, but that is all they see is the initial cap problem there. Yeah. As a technology, cloud is just somebody else's computer, and all those things used to hire your sysadmins and sysprogs for, somebody else is taking care of it for you there. So that's appealing to a lot of people as well. Just ask and I shall receive, without all the provisioning overhead from before. And right. Again, other people have just caught up in the hype that somebody else is doing it, so I should be doing it too. A lot of people attend Frequent Flyer University and read those magazines in the front and get their picture on technology from there, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah, I guess, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but, one of my focus areas when I was trying to drive some of this stuff forward and help drive it forward for IBM, and especially Z, was I tried to make the distinction that, and let me use IBM as a very specific example here. IBM obviously has a business strategy and a business interest in being a service provider and extending and expanding the global services business in one way or another, not so much strategic outsourcing, but to really offer a variety of services in the cloud where IBM hosts those services and makes them available, right? But my interest in Z as a technologist was always, well, how can I introduce the capabilities and the features of a Z system that will allow people to build clouds using that technology, right? And so my focus was always, let's cloudify the enterprise rather than try to convince, our customers who have maybe the best experience in running IT shops in the world, instead of kind of hinting at them that they should outsource the delivery of services to somebody else, even if it's IBM, is to do more service delivery, be more flexible, adopt new cost models, and have that agility, and introduce that approach to service orientation in their own shops. And I don't think I was ever actually successful in getting people to kind of see it that way, or at least enough people to see it that way.
Yeah, I agree. And then, and frankly, the cloud model of somebody else's computer is appealing and right in a lot of circumstances. So the, you know, the hybrid thing really is, if you're sensible about things and wanting to ensure that, you know, your family jewels are protected, the hybrid model is the type of thing that we should be enabling on the mainframe and making that simple and all those other things. But, you know, it's not easy.
Yeah, we're going to get to this with the, you know, the thing I want to talk about next. But, you know, some of the challenges that we face in IT, and especially in mainframe space, is you know, some of those challenges are not technical in nature. They're either perceptions or attitudes or either a lack of appreciation or an unwillingness to change process or business models. Like, so, and I think that applies to cloud in particular, because, you know, if in fact what's preventing an enterprise from or what's leading an enterprise to see the value in hosting services or getting services delivered on somebody else's infrastructure, what that means to me is that they haven't taken their own IT environments and potentially making those IT environments more of a profit center rather than just a cost center, right? I think it's an apples and oranges comparison, because the way IT shops are managed in on-premise, you know, customer location is not the same business model as services that are hosted in what people think of as traditional cloud.
Yeah, so, I agree.
Not at all a technical set of problems. It's more a set of issues related to how enterprises kind of perceive and treat and manage and operate their own IT environment.
I agree. I mean, if it was purely a technology issue, then it'd be relatively straightforward. But there's so many cultural and inertia based things that are the real difficulties in moving in a particular direction.
Yeah. So that leads us to the next question, which is that I had for you, which is, what do you consider the biggest challenges for the mainframe going forward? You know, are they the same? Are they new than what we've kind of identified in the past? You know, how can we make the mainframe more accessible and more valuable and to people?
I think a lot of the problems are the same that we've been had over the last umpteen years, but it just in different guises now. I mean, we still face the us and them situations in workplaces, silos that build up. You know, people can build great business cases for doing something on Z, those business cases can be then taken by the others, who then can either warp the figures by, you know, doing your cost of acquisition over shorter periods and that type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to need to build another building if you want to do this there. Well, we'll just factor it in because we might do it anyway, so we don't count it, and we then compare it against your mainframe model, and oh look, we're so much better. So we've got still that type of problem of silos, of people who've graduated in the non-mainframe environment who are now reaching the C level and not having that background, and it's hard to educate there because they're in such a position where they are not being paid to be educated but to make decisions. So culturally, I think the mainframe issues are the worst or the hardest to deal with. The technology issues, you know, the improvements in functionality and reliability and all those other things that the Z has been doing over the last few years, well, if you're evaluating that basis alone, then it's not much of a hard case to make. It's just all those other peripheral, for want of a better phrase, things that either stop it from being put in the door or have pressure on it while it is in the door to get it out of the door.
Yeah, there's probably an entire couple hours we could spend on challenges. You know, I know that you have, you know, the kind of the same view I have on perception and an apples to apples comparison on business case and value and cost in particular. You know, you know as well as I do. We've run into environments or enterprises where, you know, the cost of the cafeteria is in the mainframe budget somehow.
Yes, yeah, the corporate Learjet.
yeah. The one thing I did want to, without being too, provocative, what do you think? I'm trying to state this question without giving away, you know, my perspective on it, but I get the feeling that that the some of the clients, some of the folks that are actually that love Z and are running successful Z shops can actually in some cases be part of the problem. And what I mean by that is that it's probably no secret to anybody that one of the reasons, for example, that Z is has a reputation for being stable and reliable and available is because it's managed that way, right? The people who manage these systems in large enterprises are very skilled, they're very disciplined, they're very process-oriented. They have extremely well-honed process for change management, et cetera, which, you know, maintains order and stability in these systems. The downside of that is that they're often perceived, and maybe rightly so, as being protective of the environment, which leads to not having the environment as accessible, right, to people or to developers as other platforms.
That's certainly a good sentiment there, because one of the things that's nice coming out from we're seeing in the Docker environment and this DevOps stuff, you know, a lot of people joke that DevOps is, you know, put into production and then test type of stuff. But if it's used properly and Z can fit into this new way of doing things quite nicely, where you can quickly fire up new apps and demonstrate the value and promote them into the in through the system through a well-managed lifecycle. So that's what things like I like pursuing OpenShift is it brings that similar discipline that we've been used to in the Z environment of being cautious but courageous sometimes, but doing so in so that it's seen as far more accessible, that people can spin up and get things done and ad hoc projects and just good enough to get things to the stage where they can be brought on board, and they can be brought on board on the Z finally, rather than somebody having to fire up a little VMware instance and they can demonstrate it there and then promote it into production through the whatever the lifecycle mechanisms used there.
Those are great insights.
The other thing just put in a plug here is one of the things we do. A lot of work here at SNA is not just looking at the future technologies, but helping exploit things, and even to the point of things like wonderful technology called NJE, that the mainframe operating systems are able to transfer files. You know, I see a lot of our clients using all sorts of bizarre FTP scripts to try and achieve the same functionality. So we actually created an NJE instance that works on Linux and Solaris, and that talks as a peer to ZOS and VM and VSE and the like, using even ever SSL and that type of stuff. Because it's an old technology, but it's a really, really powerful one if it's used properly. And if you can integrate your mainframe and your distributed systems in using technologies like that, I think that's always a positive too. And it makes the mainframe visible. Hey, the mainframe is serving this capability. it's reliable, it's secure, et cetera. And I think those type of small things that help you, if you can exploit the strengths that have been there over a number of years, is one of those good news stories that will help the mainframe's cause.
Yeah, that's a great point. Because, you know, some of those capabilities, some of those functions in a shop, you know, they're not very glamorous, right?
It's the plumbing. But if you get the plumbing right, you don't have to get the plunger out. You know?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Another great example of that is people who can take advantage of the enormous I/O bandwidth and performance and sustained I/O rates out of a Z system for doing data backup and recovery and transformations and movement from one platform to another. What we'd like to have happen, of course, is that we find technologies and approaches to data management where there's not so much movement of data around, because there's one hell of a lot of capacity spent just on moving data from point A to point B and doing various types of transforms. But given that data has to be moved around so much in an IT environment, and it has to be backed up and copied and et cetera, Z has great, great facilities for doing that kind of stuff. And it's not very glamorous, but it is plumbing. It's necessary. And, you know, doing it on Z is cost effective.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the problems Z has in that respect, though, is a lot of these new technologies get built, you know, almost as a prototype on a smaller platform. And when they get to the stage of rolling it out, they start finding, you know, the scalability issues. So they resort to various technologies like Mongo has sharding, so you can do things well. You know, if this was, you know, co-developed on Z, they would have, you know, discovered that you don't really need sharding if you have the right infrastructure and things like that. So sometimes we retrofit things to the packages on the packages that run on Z that don't need to be there, because the hardware can take care of things and the like.
Yeah. There are lots of examples of that. As long as maybe if things were different, turned around, where a lot of these technologies were first developed and introduced on Z with its capabilities to scale, I mean, maybe we would still have designs that would, in those cases, need to scale down effectively anyway. So maybe there really is no single design point.
No, that's right.
But there is a presumption, right? As you're pointing out, there's a presumption in the design of a lot of this software that in order to get scalability, you have to implement very, very creative and innovative ways of doing some of that stuff that are really not necessary on Z.
That's true. I mean, you can cluster for good reasons or bad reasons. Cluster because you just haven't got the capacity, or one of the things we provide is for Z customers, because Red Hat don't offer the service, is the high availability option. So you're using the GFS2 file system to be able to have multiple nodes with concurrent read-write access. And there are good business cases for where that technology is good, and Z fits in right in there with it. But then you've got the other places where clustering is there as a means of scaling or getting around some other bottleneck that really ought not be there. So I think that's, you know, leads me on to saying one of the nice developments has been the Linux community cloud system, where, you know, if people are developing these type of stuff from scratch, they can do it concurrently on Z as well as they do it on their Intel boxes, and see what the different characteristics are and see how they can take advantage of both environments and the like. So that's been a good innovation. You know, my pet peeve is always there's never been a hobby license for Z software. That would be the next step beyond the Linux community cloud, as far as I'm concerned, if you want to continue this outreach to the new for new workloads and new people getting on the platform. I mean, one of the things we've done, I've been doing for a number of years, is we've got the Mono project, which allows you to run .NET applications, because wouldn't be nice to bring in that type of workload into a Z environment and have people let them run their .NET apps and type of stuff. So again, you get the plumbing right and make it available, then potential for good things to happen. And there's a whole lot of surrounding stuff that needs to happen as well, but you know, having a community system, having hobby licenses, you know, getting involved from day one in developing packages on Z is some of the things I think need to be promoted.
I couldn't agree more. That kind of is a good segue to my maybe the final thing I wanted to ask you about, which was, you know, what, you know, especially within the context of the Open Mainframe project, what would you like to see that community engaged in, and what would you like to see come out of that community in the future? And maybe some of what we just talked about, maybe the OMP could help with.
I think this outreach, its visibility to the outside world, participation in bounty type projects, participation in mastering the mainframe. You know, the Linux community system is excellent. Can we extend that beyond just the Linux space to allow people to extend so they can develop multi-tier applications easily without having to, you know, run through all sorts of hoops or indulge in all sorts of acquisition of hardware, et cetera. I think the Open Mainframe project can advocate for that type of thing and work through those technical, non-technical issues to make it happen.
Well, hey, listen, I've eaten up more of your time than we probably were allotted, Neil. Let me just thank you once again for taking the time and sharing your thoughts with us. I know it's valuable for me and hopefully, you know, those who listen to this podcast will really enjoy, you know, the conversation. So thank you very much, and you know, I actually hope to run into you at some point.
Yeah, likewise. I would sit down and have a quick drink or so.
You betcha. You betcha.
Hey, it's been a stimulating conversation. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, Neil. So that's it. Thanks very much, and until next time. Bye now.